Senate Agriculture and Veterans Policy Committee will come to order. Members will be filtering in here as we go along, but we're going to start because we'd like to be out of here at 5, if at all possible, maybe a little quicker than 8. So I think we'll start right in, members, and we'll ask, it's here about Minnesota Veterans Homes, and we had an audit, and Office of Legislative Auditor Mike Hastings, Auditor Manager, is here, and if he'd come up and we get done, we'll go through the audit, and then I have a question that I want to ask, and maybe some other members have a question they would like to ask. So welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division. I have with me Mike Hassing, who is the audit manager responsible for the audit that we did at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I'd like to, if I could, just take a few minutes and provide an overview of who we are and what we do. The Legislative Auditor's Office is the audit arm of the legislature, and we do a variety of different types of audits. We spend quite a bit of our resources auditing the state's financial statements every year and doing audit work on behalf of the federal government as far as how the state has complied with federal programs. When we're not doing that, we have a few other audits that we do on a routine basis, including audits of the constitutional officers and financial statement audits of a few other public entities. We have a fair amount of time during the year that we devote to audits that are focused on internal controls and legal compliance, and we review the agencies under our jurisdiction. We have over 150 different entities that we have audit responsibility for, and through a risk assessment process, we identify entities that we believe are in need of audit for any number of reasons. This year, among those audits that we did was an audit of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. When we're doing an audit of internal controls and compliance, we are looking at how well the agency has designed its internal controls in order to safeguard its assets and make sure that its financial activity is recorded appropriately, and how well it has complied with statutory provisions that are related to its financial operations. So with that framework, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Hassing, and he'll explain the results of our audit at the Minneapolis Veterans Home.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Michael Hassing. I'm an audit manager for the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I am responsible for the audits of the Veterans Home, and I just would like to note that in addition to the audit of the Minneapolis Veterans Home that we will concentrate on here today, during this audit cycle, we also did an audit of the Veterans Home at Fergus Falls and an audit of the Veterans Home Board, kind of the last audit of that as it transitioned its responsibilities to the Department of Veterans Affairs. As you know, Minneapolis Veterans Home is the largest of the 5 Veterans Home, approximately 400 residents, a budget of about $35 million on a year. This was a regularly scheduled internal control and compliance audit. It covered the period July 1st, 2004 through June 30th, 2007, but we did look at the internal controls that were present at the home while we were out there in April of 2008. Again, we took a fairly comprehensive review of the financial activities of the home, including the cost of care calculation, looked at the resident accounts, gift and donation activity, the payroll, administrative expenditures, including procurement and fixed assets. Again, our focus was on internal controls and compliance and financial activities. We did not look at the actual care that was being provided at the home. The last time the OLA was at Minneapolis Veterans Home, we issued a report in July of 2005. Our current audit scope during that period of time was a period of a lot of changes, a lot of healthcare concerns for Minneapolis Veterans Home, and many other challenges. They had turnover of many of their key administrators, turnover within their financial management operations, and many other staffing vacancies. They had Department of Health was doing inspections and monitoring. They had federal investigators and outside consultants, and a lot of this activity ultimately led to the governor's executive order to transfer that oversight from the Veterans Home Board to the Department of Veterans Affairs. But through all those challenges, it did not excuse the Veterans Home of its financial management responsibilities. We did issue in this report, it's a very critical report with some very serious financial management concerns and internal control deficiencies. There's 18 findings in the report and numerous recommendations. And again, concerning is that from that prior audit report in June of 2005, out of the 8 recommendations in that report, 6 of those have been repeated in this report that were not resolved by the home. During the course of the audit, we did meet with the commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Acevedo, the newly appointed administrator at the home, as well as the business manager. They concurred with all the findings, and they were very cooperative throughout the process. Most importantly, I guess, is finding number 1 in the report, which starts on page 9. This is a very cross-cutting finding, and that's what we found at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. It didn't seem like there was any of the areas that we looked at we found deficiencies in. It wasn't like it was just in payroll or just in travel, but it was throughout the organization. And again, finding 1, we concluded that the Minneapolis Veterans Home did not fulfill its responsibilities for financial management to control their financial activities and to ensure compliance with laws and regulations. And that is really some very, very concerning conclusions. There were serious internal control deficiencies throughout the organization. There was a lack of administrative oversight and an unacceptable level of financial management. The financial records lacked integrity. We found numerous errors, missing documentation, and incomplete reconciliations. There was a lack of fundamental internal controls over business activities, which created an operating environment with a high degree of risk and numerous opportunities for fraud. While we did not find any direct evidence of fraud, there are certainly some red flags that we pursued and certainly some areas that we simply could not tell because the controls were so weak. Some of the fundamental internal control deficiencies that we pointed out was a lack of safeguarding of receipts, not reconciling internal accounting systems for their accounts receivable, resident accounts, or donations to the state's accounting system, not restricting access to those computer systems. And each of those 3 areas were findings that were identified in the prior audit report. There also was a lack of documentation. And again, as an auditor going in, if somebody cannot produce transaction support, cannot explain various transactions that were made, other files that were missing, it certainly is a red flag for us. Moving through the report, again, we had some concerns in the payroll area as well, and these were both repeat findings from the prior audit, too. Finding number 6, again, were their payroll system. The Minneapolis Veterans Home uses a time track, kind of a separate accountability and time recording system where the employees swipe their cards as evidence of their hours worked. But again, the system does not provide an audit trail, doesn't provide an audit history to track approvals of that time. And we also found that in some occasions there was a mass approval of timesheets rather than an individual timesheet review and approval by a direct supervisor. And finding number 7 is an overtime finding. And again, we just felt that the home was not managing the overtime of their employees. The home incurred about $2 million of overtime every year. There were certain employees that were earning more in overtime than they were from their regular salary. There was no authorization, no verification of this overtime. And some employees we found that worked 45 to 60 hours of overtime every pay period, not just for a pay period in a week, not just for a pay period in a month, but over a 3-year period that we were looking in our audit. So we certainly questioned whether that was reasonable. We questioned whether that was physically possible. And we questioned and doubt if the employees really worked all those hours or did they just work the system. Other key issues that we identified in the report include lack of monitoring over their fixed assets and their inventory control procedures in the pharmacy. We also were concerned about unsettled cash advances from the gift and donations account. That is finding number 12. During fiscal year 2007, there was $12,000 of unaccounted cash, unreconciled cash, for money that they had advanced to an employee to take residence on a field trip or an activity or event, but there was not corresponding documentation on the backside of that transaction to support the actual expenses incurred or the return of cash. There were also errors in the cost of care calculation. Again, these were small amounts, small errors, mainly only affecting those residents that were being charged the maximum cost of care rate. But nonetheless, there were errors in that calculation by using incorrect amounts, incorrect allowable costs, and it was not being detected by the home. We were also concerned with the number of thefts that occurred at the home, certainly during the time when we were out there during the audit. And they do have a responsibility to report all of these incidents to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, as well as to the local law enforcement agencies. So you can see, Mr. Chair, members, it's a big report, very concerning to us to see this number of issues and internal control deficiencies. And those are the highlights of most of the comments in the report. And so I would be certainly welcome to entertain any questions that you might have.
Senator Corning.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Mr. Hessing, I want to thank you for this very extensive report. And I got to say, coming from this member, this is very, very, very troubling. I guess you come up with the findings. I don't see any. Was there ever any explanation, or don't you seek an explanation from the people at the home? I guess we'll have to seek that out here then, or Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair and Senator Corning, we do discuss all of our findings and recommendations with the home. We try to get an understanding of why the situation occurred and if they had recognized it. In certain of these cases, the home was aware of situations. They knew they had some deficiencies. They knew they were short on staff. They knew they had a lot of leadership changes and management changes. They knew they had an overtime issue. I think, again, you'll probably have to just ask them as to what they were thinking at the time. But we did report what we found, and that is our responsibility.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask one other question, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hessing. It almost appears like somebody should be prosecuted, or the Attorney General's office should look into some of this stuff. It looks like it's almost illegal activity. Do you recommend that, or do we have to ask the Attorney General to look into this? Or
Mr. Chair and Senator Corning, again, we refer reports to the Attorney General. Okay. We find direct evidence of malpractice, misappropriation of assets. And in this case, while we did not find any direct evidence, there certainly are a lot of factors and a lot of red flags that are concerning to us.
Mr. Chairman, I just got to say one other thing, and one thing that really popped out at me is the home did not solicit any vendor bids when required. So I'm wondering, to me, if somebody was getting bids and or getting the contract and didn't even have to bid on it, to me, that's something that should be whoever was letting the vendor have the whatever contract it was. I to me, that should be something that should be looked into and prosecuted. So anyway, this is really troubling.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I could point out just a couple of things. In the back of our report, there is a response from the department. It starts on page 33 with direct response to the recommendations that we made. While it might not provide explanation, it does show a plan of action for them and a timetable
They
want to resolve. And also, if I could point out on page 22 on the recommendations related to our overtime finding, we do recommend that they review those overtime payments and, if necessary, work with the Hennepin County Attorney if they determine that there was actual illegal activity occurring there.
Maybe we should have
the Deputy Commissioner Aceto, if he would come up and maybe just join. He can maybe help with some of the questions and answers. So while he's coming up, I'm going to go to Senator Erickson Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation of the report. I share Senator Coring's shock at this report. I must say I have every confidence in the new deputy commissioner that we hired last year, and he has had his hands full on quality of care issues as well as many other things. But it seems now that we've gotten our second major report on the Minneapolis Veterans Home that is providing us some disastrous findings. And it seems that it's on the same really terrible path as the quality of care issues were last year. So this is really disappointing to hear these sorts of things. I'm sure the deputy commissioner has some plans for helping us work through this, as he has been doing with the quality of care issues. But just another good thing is that we have the OLA here to do these kinds of audits so that we can not only hear from the families and the staff and the veterans groups and folks at the veterans home, but we have some actual very nonpartisan fact-based data for us to move forward with. I feel so hopeful on one hand with Mr. Acevedo here, and I feel extremely disappointed in this terrible report. So we've got a lot of work to do ahead of time. And my main concern on this issue is with the overtime hours. We were looking at the mandatory overtime limitations out there because we know that has some issues for care delivery and working your staff too much, and then they make medication errors. And I know those things have improved on the quality care issues. I think those things have settled down, but now at the same time, we have huge financial mess on our hands. So big work ahead.
Any other questions? First, I want to be sure and tell you that that's a wonderful home. I think the world of it. If we need to make some corrections, we can do that, get it back where it is the star of the veterans' homes. That's my point, and that's what I want to do. But I want to go, the financial responsibility is not in my committee or our committee. That's under Senator Berglund. She has a way of providing, paying for all that. That's her. But I'm going to talk a little bit about finding number 17, if you look in your book. And I remember very distinctly having people in my office regarding overcharging veterans for their care. This issue was brought to our attention several years ago, and I'm troubled to see that the problem continues according to this latest audit. That has got to be corrected. There's no sense in charging somebody to overcharging. $200-$300 a day is a lot of money for a veteran who doesn't have anything. I'm willing to give you a little time, but my patience is running out when it gets to be in 2.7 and 2.9, and I just want to be sure that you encourage you to see that gets corrected, because I don't want that probably get out of this room, but that's the way it is. And I remember very distinctly that we gave orders to have that corrected.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gilbert Acevedo, Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Health Care. I've been in the position now for exactly 1 year and 10 days. The job is quite a task, as was mentioned by several members of the committee. We too, Commissioner and I and the staff, are disappointed with the outcome of this audit. It's very serious. We take it very seriously. However, we embrace the Office of the Legislative Auditors. We were very happy to have them there. And we actually were looking forward to the comments so that we knew exactly the direction we needed to go. There were several employees, that, including the leadership, that was changed. There was a revolving door of leadership and on many others. So we understand the seriousness. I personally understand the seriousness of the audit. What I'd like to do is introduce Mr. Ed Anderson. He is the business manager for the Minneapolis home. I'd like him to explain some of the processes that he's putting in place, some of the things that we're doing, and then I'll also comment on some of the things that I am doing from the central office to ensure that we rectify this issue and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Edmund Anderson. I'm the business manager at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, and I've been there for the last 2 years. I would like to say that my entire staff and other supervisors and managers at the Veterans Home do take this audit very serious and very personal. We were able to identify many of these findings prior to Mr. Hassing's team coming to conduct the audit. We have taken a number of steps to resolve them. However, it fell outside of the scope of the audit period. We did work with them very closely to review the processes and procedures that we had implemented as changes, and they assured us that we were moving down the right direction. We'll continue to work on those processes and procedures, and we'll report on a quarterly basis to the Department of Finance those changes that have occurred and our progress throughout the whole process. In addition to the reporting to the Department of Finance, we also do a quarterly report to our Quality Assurance Council. That will be my responsibility, and that will give us the governance and the oversight as far as how we resolve these audit issues. In addition to that, I've incorporated in performance standards in all my staff and employees.
Commissioner, how much? I'm not going to give you 2-3 more years. That should have been done. I hate to set a timetable on it, but I think this committee would like to have something done before we get out of here this year. And maybe I'm speaking out of tone here, but I want that home. I remember when I first heard this there, I said, I want it fixed, and I want it fixed now. And now it's got to be 3-4 years. So I think it's we want an answer. And not only an answer, we want it corrected.
Mr.
And we
Chair.
Hate to be bitter, but that's we represent people that are kind of vulnerable. They don't have, you know, to act for themselves, but that's what we're going to do in this committee.
Mr. Chair, if I could address that quickly for you. Our plan primarily, once it's in place, we need to be able to sustain it for the long term. When I interviewed for this position 2 years ago, I asked those very same questions. I looked at the prior audit report, and I was assured that those findings had been resolved, only to get on board and find that they had not been. And part of the problem with that was the changes that they made were not sustained for the long term. And that's what we have to be able to demonstrate to the auditors the next time.
Senator Erickson-Robes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I didn't get your name, sir.
Ed Anderson.
Mr. Anderson, thank you. And so you've just been on board 2 years.
Yes.
And we understand that you walked into a big mess.
Correct.
So what actions did you take during the last 2 years? And I understand it's a good thing to have a plan to move forward, but can you explain to us how this happened over the last 2 years? And were you keeping the commissioner apprised and the deputy commissioner apprised about these ongoing problems? And can you talk a little bit more specifically about what you were doing?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Senator. At that time, we had an executive director in charge of the home board, and we also had a finance director at the home board level. They were well informed of those discrepancies that were ongoing.
Senator, you done?
That doesn't seem like much of an answer, Mr. Anderson. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not an accountant for one thing or an economist, but this is a really terrifically bad report. And for us to get single sentence answers back as explanations isn't very satisfying.
Chair Bickerman, is this on? I would like to just make a statement. If you remember, the homes were moved under the complete change of governance, November 19th, 2007. Everyone you see testifying today with the exception of Mr. Anderson, who was there 1 year earlier, are not part of the problem. We're trying to be the solution. There was an audit done in 2005, signed by the administrator at that time, saying, we're going to take care of this. 1 month later, he was gone. There was 30 correction orders in the paper in 2005. 2006, there were still issues in the front of the paper. That's when the Long-Term Care Commission began, as mm-hmm. you, well, though you were on yes. that, met for much of a year. The governance was changed November 2007. I, as commissioner, knew that there were issues. We had no access to any of this until basically a year ago. Deputy Commissioner Acevedo comes forward. We are asking for, you know, we welcome the OLA. This is, I think you said earlier, Senator, this is similar to what was going on. The first thing that Deputy Commissioner Acevedo did was care issues. Remember, there were, you know, we as of last June, we were free from the Department of Health, all of the strictures from them. This was a report that started from 2007 at the changeover, went back basically 4 years. We knew it was bad. We didn't know just how bad it is. And there are no excuses, but we are very angry. And this is dealing with financial issues. Most of the people involved are no longer with our department. But we have had 1 year, and I just would like to say that there is systemic issues that go deep, they go long. And I would just ask that we not be blamed for things that happened before us, and I know that's hard, but there's also nothing that I can say that you as a committee haven't heard before. Chairman, I'm well aware that you have asked the Vets Homes Board to fix up those issues. I was aware of that. I don't know what to say. They haven't been done. But we have had 1 year. Great progress has been made. Great progress will be made. I just wanted to make that statement.
Senator Ishii-Robe, just follow up.
Just one follow-up, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. As you will recall, when we were talking about changing over the oversight functions to your division, I said we have to make sure we're not tossing you with hot potato without giving you some potholders to catch it with. So I think we did get some extra resources to you. So I do understand that you came into this and it was already a very bad situation. I'm wondering to what extent that you knew about the things in the report, because in my mind we were really primarily focused on quality of care issues, a direct patient contacts and family issues and falls in the fact that we had patients dying. I mean, that's the number one priority. I understand those things are much, much improved. So I want to acknowledge the department and the work that's been going on at the home and at the department in this area. But to what extent were you aware of the depth of the problem on the financial end?
We weren't aware of the depth. I mean, that's our issue today. Mr. Anderson had been hired a year, but he was not in charge. Very obviously, attention hadn't been paid. Like I said, the 2005 report drawing attention that had basically been ignored. That's the depth of how broken the system was, and I can't defend it. But I also know that people are in place, and you've heard all of this. I mean,
I'm gonna come right back to the same concern that I had. And this financial audit covers from 2004 to 2007. Whether these issues have been addressed since then, that's my concern.
Mr. Chair, if you take a look at the agency responses, it identifies those areas that we've already corrected or have taken measures to correct and what our status is. And those will be the types of items that we'll report to the Department of Finance on a quarterly basis, ongoing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, like Mr. Anderson has said, we can correct things, but we want to make sure that we correct them such that they'll be long gone. So one of the things that we're also doing from the central office, I am asking our financial manager to work on getting an internal audit system in place. The Veterans Home Board had an internal audit system in place at one time, and I haven't been able to figure out why it was stopped, but the internal audit system would go into each home and conduct the same type of audits that the Office of Legislative Auditors would do. And just to make sure that if you say you were going to fix this, this has been fixed and you're continuing to operate as you said you were going to. Adding it to the Quality Assurance Council, that's relatively new. That was something that came out of the strategic planning process. And Mr. Anderson and the new administrator for the Veterans Home, Ms. Judy Kirky Coleman, and the rest of the staff added this as part of their new process. Last year, in order to answer Senator Erickson Rope's question, we were focused, I shouldn't say we, I was focused on the care issues. I wanted to make sure that no one was harmed at that facility, that it was not, that the care issues that were reported in the paper would stop. Mm-hmm. Right in the middle of that, we had bonding and many other things that were going on. And we kept being asked, why don't you have a strategic plan? So we were being pulled in many directions. So to answer the questions, I was not aware of the magnitude of the financial audit. If I was to look up the auditor's report and see what were the things that said that were corrected, one would assume, although one shouldn't assume, but one would assume that those things would continue if the leadership wasn't intact. Well, now we know that the leadership failed the system. But again, Mr. Chair, our number one priority at the time, for at least the first 6 months that I got here, was to make sure the care was focused on providing the proper care to those residents that they deserve.
Senator Dill, you're next.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was jumping in right after Senator Erickson Ropes. Didn't get an answer from Mr. Anderson, and I was going to back her up. But she's already, it's already been taken care of.
Okay. Senator Skoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Dyrud and Deputy Commissioner Acevedo, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that you didn't know about these and you didn't understand the depth. But when I look at the letter that you're responding to the legislative auditor from the Judy Kirky Coleman, the administrator, it's full of the home concurs with the recommendation. The home concurs with this recommendation, and it says interest will be allocated, and this will be done. To follow up on the chairman's question, what would be a reasonable timeline for this committee to expect you to come back to us with a response on these 18 findings that says the home has developed and the home has done this as opposed to response we will do? Would that be something that we could expect before the end of session?
Mr. Chair, Senator, as Mr. Anderson has an obligation and the home has an obligation to report their status report, we too can report the status report to the committee and let you know on a quarterly basis where we are and at what stage along the process. Part of our strategic plan is also putting things in place so that we have the tracking and monitoring system. So a letter from me or a package from me to the committee stating this is our status report, this is where we are. I just don't want to give false hopes to the committee in saying that we have fixed everything. I want to make sure that we fix it so that in a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, those systems are still in place. And those are the mechanisms that we want to make sure that we put in place. But an immediate fix, or at least giving you a status report, we can absolutely do that on a quarterly basis.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner, it appears to me that as of November 24th, the recommendation is here from the legislative auditor. Your response is there explaining what you're intending on doing. And if sometime before end of April, an update as to how you're doing on these 18 things. I think it would be helpful for the committee. And, Mr. Chair, I don't want to presume that that we could do this, but it would be nice if we had it before May so we would have a chance to assist and respond if it isn't meeting the goals that you think we should have. So I don't know where you want to go with that, but it looks like a lot of it's here, and an update would be good.
Well, Senator Scoia, I just want an update. I want to know what's going on, and if you can't do miracles, but at least you can start. Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, could I ask Mr. Hessing if he'd come up to the table one more time? I've got a question for him. I believe, Mr. Chairman, that Mr. Hessing, did you say that you did an audit up at Fergus Falls, too?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, we did do an audit up at Fergus Falls Veterans Home that covered the very same period of time, fiscal year 5, 6, and 7, and you'll be pleased to hear that that report actually did not have any findings or recommendations in that report.
Mr. Hessing, thank you for that. And you know what, Mr. Chairman, well, number one, when this report goes to Senator, as we all know, Senator Bergman, my good friend, when this report gets over to that committee, which I'm on, it is not going to be looked on very friendly, and she's going to be very upset. But, Mr. Chairman, what I think, here's what I think we should do is, you know, Mr. Chairman, I've been down to your district many times, been down to the Laverne home, the Fergus Falls home. I've actually been up to the Silver Bay home. Obviously, they know how to do things right. And I think we, this committee, or Senator Bergman's committee, I'm going to talk to her about this, we should set a timeline if the folks that are in charge or can't seem to get a handle on this, we should put a time limit on it. And if they can't get it under control, then we ought to close the Minneapolis Vets home, I think. And I will say that in Brainerd and in Senator Kubley's district, and I'm sure in Senator Murphy's district, there's nursing homes that would do a heck of a lot better job of taking care of our veterans. And I just think that, you know, I've been here 6 years, and I just see this come before us over and over, and we scold people, but nothing ever gets done. And so I think, you know, we got to start putting our foot down and saying, enough is enough. This is ridiculous.
Senator Coring, I agree with you, but I want to give the new deputy commissioner a chance to get it up. This is, Minneapolis home is different than the one in Laverne. Probably different clientele. It's big and it's huge and it's got more patients than. So there's a difference. It's kind of hard to compare them, and I'm with you. They should be the same. But we got to give them a little benefit of a doubt because there's different circumstances there.
I don't want to go so far, though.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I expect to be held accountable. I spent 23 years in the military being held accountable, and I didn't take this job not knowing or not expecting to be held accountable. I think that we need, as far as the department, given an opportunity to fix and move forward. The Minneapolis home is very different from the Fergus Falls, Laverne, and Silver Bay home. I came from a 400-bed facility myself as an administrator there. It's not necessarily the size of the facility. It's the leadership of the facility and how you set your systems in place. That's what's important in running a facility. So, yes, I expect to be held accountable, no doubt. But I think we should be given the opportunity to try to repair that. The intent today was to come up and give you an idea of some of the successes that some of the changes we've made. Minneapolis home is a very different place right now than where it was just a year ago. But again, in the not too distant future, this committee is going to hear about the Department of Justice Civil Rights for Institutionalized Persons Act, CRIPA, an investigation by the United States Department of Justice. Again, looking back at the care prior to the change in governance. And again, we are going to be faced, Commissioner and I are going to be sitting before a committee being held accountable for something that was done 3-4 years ago. But that's okay, because we want to make sure that we move forward and we provide the best possible care for our veterans.
I'm going to go back to Senator Coring's remarks. I think you, I'm not going to let you take that home down as long as I'm chair of this committee. I'll be very blunt, because I think there's a need for it up here, and people in Minneapolis, St. Paul are not going to drive 5 hours like I'm going to have for when I go back home. They won't visit their veterans. So I think if you look at the numbers, we're going to look at that one in one of these committees, you're going to find out that this home should probably be twice as big as it is to handle it. And Senator Robes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I again want to echo a little bit of what Deputy Commissioner Acevedo said is, you know, this committee needs to bear in mind the fact that the primary mission of the last year was directed at quality of patient care, direct patient care, and patient safety and patient lives, and how the medications are being accounted for and distributed. And that has greatly improved. We've heard testimony today that you've just found out to relatively recently the depth of this financial problem. And Deputy Commissioner, I would just ask you, as we move forward with these plans and are looking at deadlines, do you feel the department has the tools that you need and the resources to be able to get down to the nitty-gritty of these financial problems in the same way that you did with the patient care problems? You mentioned you were the lead administrative officer at a large facility. So do you personally, or do within the department, have the financial background to get to this in the same kind of, you know, tough, effective way as you've dealt with patient care issues?
Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson Ropes, that is part of the answer to that question is that we are going to be looking into developing an internal audit system. And with that, we're probably going to contract that out and get a service in here, a professional accounting service, that can look at across the board all of our systems and to make sure that not only identify problems, but then identify solutions as well. Doing an audit or conducting an inspection without providing the tools or the training really serves no purpose. So if I was to hire somebody to bring them in to tell me your system is broken, that doesn't help us. But if they provide us the tools, the mechanisms, help us put the policies and procedures in place, then we will succeed. The staff that we have, I'm very confident in not only Mr. Anderson, but also our business manager, our financial officer for the department, Ms. Kromschroeder. They are the best and the brightest as far as I'm concerned. They really do care. Unfortunately, we have some staff members that need to be motivated differently. And we are working on that, and we will ensure that they are motivated accordingly so that we don't have these problems.
Senator Deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to endorse what you were saying earlier about giving them another chance, giving them the benefit of the doubt, and giving them another run at getting things fixed up, hopefully in the very near future.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to address Senator Coring's concerns about the other four homes and how can they get it right in Minneapolis can't. We do conduct a monthly business meeting of all the business managers, and we discuss issues, we trade best practices, but it's something that's been relatively new that's been added to the process. So we know that they do things better than Minneapolis, but also Minneapolis has a different scope with just the number of residents and, again, with the stability of the leadership that has not been available for the last several years.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, along with what Mr. Anderson was saying, that is part of our strategic plan. And, again, it's a relatively new process that we put in place, and we've only had probably about five or six meetings at the very most. But sharing best practices and talking, that hasn't happened before. So we can learn what Fergus Falls is doing right or what Laverne is doing right and bring that into the Minneapolis home.
Any other questions? Then I'm going to ask, is the legislative auditor going to do a follow-up, or are we going to just sit here and wait till 2010?
Mr. Chair and members, we see the value in coming in and doing an audit on a periodic time frame. And certainly we don't want to get back into just coming in too early, as Mr. Acevedo and Mr. Anderson alluded to. We want to be able to see that, in fact, the root cause of some of these issues have been addressed and that they are sustainable over time. Again, so we would think that, you know, possibly as early as 2010 would be a time when we could come back to do an audit where they would have an opportunity to really address these issues, get them into place, and provide evidence that, in fact, they are working as we had hoped that they would be working.
Members, I think we ought to have a report, some kind of a written report. It doesn't have to do any legislative audit, just so we know that you're concerned and that you're following along on the direction that we're going to push to you from the auditors. I know that's Deputy Commissioner, you're new and you're trying to straighten it around, and you come from a sunny part of the country and it's 30 below here this morning, so maybe you say, what kind of a job did I get myself into? But on a serious note, we no disrespect to anybody. We just want to be sure that this home gets back, because I know it can be top-notch, and I know it can be a star, and we'll just work on it until we get it there. Any further questions? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go into the... Oh, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we will expect some kind of report from the commissioner or deputy commissioner before the end of session.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Next, we have, if there ever, as long as I be here, I'll probably never be able to say that word, Ombudsman or whatever it is, Deb Holtz and Cheryl Hennen. We want to hear from you and see what... We put that package together, and now we want to report back. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I actually have good news to report. My name is Deb Holtz, and I'm here with Cheryl Hennen this afternoon. I'm the state ombudsman for long-term care in Minnesota, and our office provides advocacy to all residents in Minnesota who receive long-term care services, including the veterans in all the veterans' homes. I'm here to provide you today just with an overview, and you have a report in front of you that talks about the outcomes of the interagency agreement that you requested between the Minnesota Board on Aging, which provides the Office of Ombudsman for Long-Term Care Services, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. This agreement has provided two things, and they are both positive. We've had increased positive contact and support with our office, and we've seen a decrease in complaints and negative concerns from the veterans. So I'm going to talk about three things today very briefly. I'm going to remind you why this interagency agreement is in place. I'll review what we've accomplished in just a little over a year and talk about a reinforcement of the next steps. We've already heard about a lot of the incidents that led up to both this interagency agreement, reports this year, et cetera. You know, between July 2005 and April 2007, our office was very involved with the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We investigated over 209 complaints. Those are listed in your report. I'm not going to review those. Those are important to look at, but I think history is only important in terms of looking at what's been done and then moving on to the next step. We don't need to keep reinforcing what happened. What I want to reinforce is the good things that have happened since we've been out there on site. As part of the Veterans Long-Term Care Advisory Commission that was put together by the governor, recommendations were made, which included the establishment of formal interagency agreements between DVA and partner agencies, including the Minnesota Board on Aging. Because of that, we authorized an ombudsman on site at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, which provided the foundation for that recommendation. Your committee is to be commended for bringing forward and supporting that legislation. Since July 2007, we've been on site on the campus. This is unique in the state of Minnesota. We provide services to all the veterans in Minnesota who get long-term care services, but we're not usually on site. I think two things have happened as a result of that. What we've seen is that many veterans who maybe didn't know to call us when they had a concern or a complaint, they know somebody's on campus. They know how to just walk to that office and talk to that person. They also know that they can get immediate information from that person. So a lot of things have changed. We've also seen a change in the number of complaints. The complaints that you previously heard about have been related to quality of care. I want to reiterate and emphasize what you heard from Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo. Those complaints have decreased. People are safer. People are not dying. People are safer, and that's very, very important. Our office looks at both quality of care and quality of life, and there are definitely issues out there still related to resident rights, information, easy access to information that people need. But the quality of care issues have changed, and I believe very strongly that's because of your involvement, our on-site presence, and the new administration that's looking at things in a new light out there. In your packet of information, you have a list of some of the current complaints and concerns that we've seen. We are working on those, and we've had good cooperation with the new deputy commissioner. I want to really emphasize that. But what the veterans really need, and they continue to need, and we have not always seen it out there, is complete information and easy access to service. Our office is merely a tool of communication. We're advocates for those people who cannot speak for themselves, but more importantly, we're allies for the people, the veterans who can speak for themselves and just need somebody to forge their path with them, to walk through the path, the information. The presence, I think, has really improved the access to information. We've seen a success out there. The current interagency agreement does end July 30th, 2009. We do recommend that you renew that interagency agreement. I think, as you've heard before from some of your members, we've only been out there a little bit over a year. A lot of things have changed, but it's still early. There's a lot of things to do yet. I stand ready to answer any questions that you have.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Holtz, just in a nutshell, when you say we see the list of complaints and we're working on them, what's the process for working on a complaint? How does it get handed off?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, that's a good question. When individuals come to the regional ombudsman who is on campus, what she does is she works with the staff who are either working on a discharge plan, medication issue, case management, whatever the individual issue is. But then all of those issues are looked at in a systemic issue. For example, we've had some recent complaints about people not understanding how they can appeal decisions, how they can make a complaint, how they can make a grievance. So not only did she respond to individual people asking those questions, but she worked with the administration out at the home to develop a better system that would look at a uniform appeal guidance so that there's steps that people can take and everybody knows what the uniform system is. So we try to address it both on the individual level and the systems level.
Senator Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hennen and Ms. Holtz. I think your testimony today provides a very clear testimony about how important the shift has been in the improvement of quality of care. The fact that you're dealing with informational questions, and your office is so important for vets and family members to go to you with these questions and concerns or complaints, and that the complaints have moved away from falls and medication errors and concerns for quality of life and quality of care to how can I appeal a decision process and access to information. There's a huge difference between those two different kinds of categories of complaints. So, again, I think that speaks to the distance that the Veterans Home has come over the last year. So I'm thrilled, and I think this office provides a key function. And, you know, I, for one, am going to do whatever I can to support the interagency agreement and make sure that we have a full-time ombudsman at the home as we continue to move forward through this, because it is just so important for families and veterans to have somebody to go to who's in a neutral position, who's not worried about taking a complaint from the vets, and they're not worried about what their boss above them is going to say about it. You can be an advocate for everyone, and you have no dog in the fight here, so except for advocating for veterans. So thank you so much for your work, and this is just a key function, I think, in the recovery.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Not. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
I will move right into Mr. Kirk Larson, if he's here, would come up. He's the chairperson of the Minnesota Veterans Home Family Council in Minneapolis, and hear from you. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
My name's Kirk Larson. I come as a sit with Diane Windham. She's the co-chair of the Family Council.
Hey, welcome.
On behalf of the Minnesota Veterans Home Family Council of Minneapolis, I want to thank each of you for your honorable service and support of our loved ones who live at the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis. We are deeply grateful for the commitment and wisdom that each of you bring to this noble and worthy cause. That said, I am pleased to present our impressions of the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis, including the progress as well as the challenges we still face. Your meeting packets include a couple of documents that describe the Family Council. One is an informational sheet. The other provides a brief bio of each of the Family Council officers. I'd like to add a little bit of information. In introducing ourselves to family members and friends of new residents, I tell them that we are like a PTA of a school, all volunteers and the eyes and the ears of the school, to ensure that it is meeting the needs of the students. We are trying to let the family members and friends have as much information as possible about the workings of the home where they are leaving their loved ones. We emphasize that we are volunteers. Family Council officers are elected by the membership, and the existing team will be serving another year. We are very interactive, and almost everything that we say or do goes through at least five sets of eyes to ensure that we remain on target. You will find in your packets the list of our accomplishments during 2008, our strategic plan for 2008, the draft of our strategic plan for 2009, as well as a tip sheet that we developed for those visiting their loved ones who struggle with dementia. It is notable that this family council is unlike family councils from the years prior to 2008, which is, at least in part, because we are devoted to implementing one of the directives of the 2007 Governor's Veterans Long-Term Care Advisory Commission report, specifically to collaborate with the administrator of the Minnesota Veterans Home, who has been charged with, actively engaging family and resident councils, employees, and leadership in promoting and building a resident-centered approach at the facilities, end quote. Without a doubt, family members and friends who have a loved one living at the Minnesota Veterans Home are devoted to promoting and building a resident-centered approach at the facility. With that in mind, we believe the Family Council's primary goal is to be of service to these family members and friends so that they feel confident and comfortable enough to make suggestions and take actions that help transform the Minnesota Veterans Home into a resident-centered facility. Our service to them includes being supportive in every possible way and sometimes just listening patiently. We know that every spouse who is our primary audience at this time, and probably the most vulnerable, is on a 24/7 roller coaster ride during the entire time their loved one is living at the home. They need all the support we can give them in order to promote positive visits, and because oftentimes their lives have been turned upside down by this life event. We also know that many of the wives are scared to death of the whole process and need a source to talk to when they have concerns. Oftentimes, they are simply concerned and afraid that their concern is either too petty or they are afraid to bring it to the attention of the staff because, well, just because of who they are. Thus, the Family Council is there for them. We have listening time for them, often an hour or more, just to hear all of what is troubling them and to reassure them that their loved one is getting good care. They need to know that we do understand how they feel, because each one of us have been there or is there still. But by being there for them reliably day after day, we also help these family members and friends to gain the trust for the home. If a family member or friend brings an issue to our attention, they know that we will respect their wishes and treat the issue the way they are most comfortable. To that end, we offer a variety of ways for family members and friends to reach out to us. We offer them the opportunity to speak at our monthly meetings. We offer a form they can fill out asking them to state the problem and the action they would like to see taken. We offer them an opportunity to talk with us at any time, to include giving them our individual phone numbers, as well as offering access via the internet through an official Family Council email account. To be sure that all family members and friends' voices are heard and that each of them is informed about pertinent matters pertaining to their loved ones, we recently suggested producing a monthly Family Council newsletter. Not surprisingly, Gil Acevedo, the Deputy Commissioner of Veterans Health Care, approved. Consequently, the first edition of our newsletter will be mailed out in early February 2009, along with the invoice statements that are sent by the home. More specifically, the home will print and mail about 400 copies of this newsletter, since at this time it's an expense the Family Council cannot afford. This is a perfect example of how the home is collaborating with the Family Council to promote and build a resident-centered approach at the facility by supporting residents, family members, and friends. Other examples of significant improvements that we have seen in the past year or two consist of monthly meetings led by an assistant administrator, and which include all nursing staff. There also have been several in-house training opportunities for all nursing staff. An RN senior position has been added to the nursing model on each unit. Two new chaplains have been hired. The Minnesota Veterans Home Minneapolis leadership team has been strengthened by the following new staff additions: a permanent administrator, a second assistant administrator, and a quality management director. And most recently, a strategic plan has been forged by and for the Minnesota Veterans Home Minneapolis. These are exciting times. But you are interested in what family members and friends are saying about the home. It was announced at our January Family Council meeting that we would be addressing you today, and we asked for members' input. There were about 40 members in attendance at that meeting. We also sent it out on our email account. The good news is that after the January meeting, one member came up and said her husband had previously been in two other nursing homes and that the veterans' home is certainly the best one. Then I received a call on Sunday from another member whose husband had been in three other homes. She, too, was totally pleased with the veterans home. This is a great reflection on the administration, the staff, the governor, the legislature, and even the taxpayers of Minnesota. Thank you all for what you do. As we look towards a future that includes a dramatic culture change to the Eden alternative, it is absolutely necessary for family members and friends to be included in making a significant contribution to this transformation. The philosophy of the Eden alternative is that the home is the resident's home.
Thank you.
And that the staff are merely guests in the resident's home. Therefore, we believe that family members and friends, and probably through the Family Council, must be granted leadership positions in this culture change effort so as to participate fully in directing, planning, and implementing this vital transformation. And while it is commendable that the Minnesota Veterans Home Minneapolis produces a strategic plan, it should be mandatory that family members and friends whose lives are so deeply invested in their loved one who is living at the home have roles early and often in the strategic plan process. In addition, family members and friends should have an active role in hiring of the key personnel, because from the very beginning, newly hired employees need to know that family members and friends who have a loved one living at the home are the most important stakeholders of the home, second only to the residents. In fact, it is essential that all employees possess a capacity to work with family members and friends. During this past year, the Family Council has worked with three different administrators and are very pleased with the openness of Judy Kirky Coleman. In working with Judy, we find that she shares our goal of making this a home of excellence. To that end, Judy's excellent communication skills have even included providing family council officers with her cell phone number, along with permission to call her at any time. The family council has also had to deal with one administrator whom we felt did not treat us with the respect we deserve. That was not a good situation. Key personnel at the home must have an open mind and be respective to our concerns or suggestions rather than simply giving us lip service. We will hold them accountable as we expect them to hold us accountable. We still have some concerns at the home, which we believe warrants maintaining a full-time ombudsman on site. And while we are working with the administration on these concerns, we find that oftentimes it boils down to a matter of money. Thus, we need the aid of the legislature to ensure that, for example, our residents are being helped to eat as they should be, and make sure that the failure to do so is not simply a matter of too few dollars. We also occasionally work with family members and friends who have a loved one living at the Minnesota Veterans Home in a way that is not part of the role of the family council, more like as a concerned volunteer. We presently have an issue involving the home's interpretation of the 90-50 rules pertaining to an IRA. Specifically, an IRA is considered an exempt asset unless the spouse needs it. Clearly, this is not according to the home. If the spouse converts her IRA to pay living expenses, the home considers it income. Therefore, it's counting against her spousal support. In sum, Minnesota has a state treasure in the Veterans Home. It is not perfect yet, but very much going in the direction of a home of excellence. In order to achieve this, it takes tremendous dedication from the administration, staff, and volunteers. But the good news, for example, is that this past Thanksgiving, the family council cooked turkeys on each unit so the smell could permeate the home. You see, while a traditional meal of turkey stuffing and pumpkin pie is served to the residents each and every Thanksgiving, that familiar, comforting aroma of turkey cooking throughout the day is missing. Mm-hmm. Knowing that the sense of smell is one of the last things we lose in the aging process, the family council, together with 28 volunteers who were recruited via a brief one-time Channel 11 broadcast and who previously had no connections to the home, made sure residents experienced the feel and smell of home by having the aroma of cooking turkey wafting through the air on Thanksgiving Day. It was with great pride I could show off the Veterans Home to each generous volunteer, and what a delight it was to see how impressed they were with what they saw. Finally, we know that this will be the last year for 50 to 60 of the residents at the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis. It is our goal that for those who gave so much to their country when they were so young, that it be said, we are giving them all we can in their last years. As they serve for all of us, this is a time when all of us have the opportunity and obligation to pay it forward. We at the Family Council believe we are on the right track to transform the Minnesota Veterans Home into a premier facility that our loved ones deserve. On a related note, and to provide an up-close and personal perspective, the last document in your meeting packet is a bio about a current resident at the Minnesota Veterans Home. That person is Diane's father. And again, thank you for this opportunity to speak on such an important topic. Thank you again for your loyal support of our loved ones who live at the Minnesota Veterans Home. We have attached the address so that you can check us, the Family Council, out on our website, as well as giving you the dates of our Family Council meetings. You are all invited to any of those Family Council meetings. Any questions?
Any questions from the members? If not, thank you very much. You keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move into ask the Deputy Commissioner Lucido to come up. And he's going to go through about five reports.
That's a great story.
Welcome to the committee, and I need your name. I know who you are, but you've been before us, but it's recorded, so if you do that for us.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. My name is Gilbert Acevedo, Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Health Care. Today, I've been asked to give an update on several items, a strategic planning group report, construction project priority listing status report, Department of Justice for Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act, also known as CRIPA, the state auditor's report, which I think was done, and the United States Department of Veteran Affairs survey update on that we just recently went through. It's a lot of information. I will move through it as quickly as possible to stay within the time frame of the committee. And
thank you.
If there are any questions or something that doesn't make sense, please stop me as I go along. I'd like to first say thank you to the Family Council. They have done a phenomenal job in helping us at the Veterans Home. The leadership from Diane and Kirk has been absolutely phenomenal. They really do work very hard for the family members there. The relationship that the home has with the Ombudsman's office is very strong, and I feel it's a good relationship. However, I personally disagree that we should have an Ombudsman on the campus. That is something I can report upon if you like later. There's a reason for that. It's not a standard of practice, not a standard of care, but that to have an Ombudsman involved in the day-to-day operations of a veterans home or a nursing home is not the standard. But again, I'll refrain from further comments and stick to the topic at hand. Strategic Planning Group. Our last session, there was a policy that was written that had us conduct some studies and also develop a strategic planning group. The strategic planning group was to develop a strategic plan or help develop a strategic plan for the Minneapolis home. The Minneapolis home is currently working on a strategic plan. They've completed it. We've met with the strategic planning group and presented our strategic plan to them. We're finishing it up. We're polishing up just most of the details and work on it. As a department, we felt that it was important that we start from the top down, since we just merged as a department, that we needed to have a strategic plan for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, and that's what we started with first and then started working out to the different sections and components of our strategic plan. The department completed a strategic plan, which includes a sub-plan for the Veterans Homes and Programs and Services side. Each home is in the progress of developing its own strategic plan, which will start shortly and then report back to us in relatively short order. During the development of the department's strategic plan, we held a meeting and presentation on August 14, 2008, with the strategic planning group, and it was in direct correlation to the policy and the sections that wrote the bill speaking to the strategic planning group. The legislatively directed strategic planning group convened again for a second time on January 5th, 2009. They met at the Minneapolis campus and sat through the presentation by the staff of the Minneapolis home talking about the strategic plan. The Minneapolis Veterans Home staff presented the draft strategic plan to the planning group, and the strategic planning group provided feedback, which we incorporated into the plan immediately. You see in the next slide, which is slide number 6, and I know the numbers are small, but it's the one that has the strategic plan cover on it. That's the start of the department strategic plan, and what I'd like to do is move very quickly through the strategic plan for the department and then filter through here. As a department, we started talking about what is the purpose, what is our existence, what do we do. So the mission statement for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs is dedicated to serving Minnesota veterans and their families. Vision is fulfilling the needs of Minnesota veterans and their families by providing proven and innovative programs and services to maximize quality of life. We broke into our core values. This is where we wanted to really talk about how we feel, and it's more an emotional statement about how we feel about what we do day to day. And that is our core values. And we use the word veteran, and veterans first in our hearts, minds, and actions. Excellence in our standards, trust through results. Ethics is our cornerstone, respect for service, past and present. Advocacy for care and services, nation leading in services, and stewardship of resources. We came up with 5 goals. I will mention the goals, and then as part of the packet, you have the objectives. have the objectives. The objectives are set up so that we went through what's known as a SMART test. We wanted to make sure that they were specific, measurable, attainable, that they were realistic, and that they were timely as we developed them. The first goal was talking about an integrated service. As the merging departments, two departments merging, we wanted to make sure that we integrated our services and made sure that it was a smooth transition across the board. The objectives that we have will identify timelines, and if you notice, a couple of them have already been completed. But as an example, the Chief Operating Officer will facilitate a conversion of IT platform to Microsoft to share data and enhance communication by July 1st, 2009. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Home Board were operating on two different platforms, so we couldn't even communicate across the two departments. So we were looking at streamlining that. So those are examples of some of the objectives. Goal number two is a financial integrity. This is where we talk about not only using taxpayer dollars correctly and appropriately, as outlined by the auditors, but also looking at other means of capturing dollars, such as federal dollars or other type of dollars that can come into the state of Minnesota to provide the best care for our veterans. Under goal number three, organizational systems, here we talk about more along the lines of providing quality of life for our staff, looking at our IT systems as well, and also recruiting, retaining qualified staff, and then looking at our rules and our procedures. A lot of our rules haven't been updated in many years, and so some of the things that you see, such as in order for a veteran to come into a veteran's home, X amount of dollars will be given back to the veteran to live their lives. The cost of living has not been incorporated into that for many, many years. Under goal number four is partnership, looking at stakeholders. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs will develop strategies to foster employee morale and strong partnership with stakeholders. In order for us to provide good care, we need to have a strong employment base, and we have to have good staff. So this is a way to recruit and retain qualified staff. On the goal number five is a customer service. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs will meet the needs of the veterans community by providing innovative customer service. This talks to the veteran service officers, the county veteran service officers, the various veteran service organizations, and stakeholders such as legislators and other people that are part of our team to make sure that we provide the best care to our veterans. We then broke up the strategic plan and identified some very specific goals and objectives for the veterans' homes, and these are for all five homes across the board. Goal number one, the veterans' home program will provide high quality of care and services. Here you see the objectives as well that identify a time frame when these are due. We're going to be monitoring all of these, and we can report back as part of our updates to the legislator as to where we are with some of these items. But an example would be the Director of Quality Assurance for the Central Office will develop and implement a quality improvement plan by July 1st, 2009. So that is a cross-section with all the homes looking at our best practices. Goal number two, the Veterans Home Program will develop a community relations plan and increase awareness and support for the Minnesota Veterans Homes. Again, working with our peers in the industry, other veterans homes, and other areas within our community. Objective number three, the Veterans Home Program will ensure financial integrity. Again, we want to ensure that we are using taxpayer dollars appropriately and correctly, and then also looking at other means to fulfill our commitment to our veterans, probably by getting in federal tax dollars coming in, federal dollars coming into the home for reimbursements. Goal number four, the Veterans Home Program will develop a comprehensive plan to address human resources need. Again, we are looking at developing a way to capture the best qualified staff and retaining them. because we can recruit staff, but if we don't do things to retain them, we'll lose them to other industries, and then we are having that revolving door and having problems with our ability to keep our census and ability to schedule people accordingly, and this is predominantly around our nursing staff. The goal number five, the Veterans Home Program, will develop a comprehensive risk management program. Senior Director for Veterans Healthcare Coordinated Risk Management Analysis by October 1, 2009. This ties into quality assurance, risk management across the board. We want to make sure that as we are being observed by the Department of Health, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs, and many others, that a lot of our systems in our quality assurance programs are in place so that we know before anyone else walks into our facilities what's going on. Goal number six, the Veterans Home Program will maximize information technology tools. As I mentioned before, we are on two different platforms. We're also looking at other type of healthcare programs that can help us enhance our programs there at the home. Then part of the language under the legislation said that the strategic plan for the Minneapolis home, the next section here talks about the Minneapolis home specifically. The mission at the Minneapolis home, I sat with the leadership of the Minneapolis home and told them the mission of the department is X, but I want you to look at what is your mission here at the home. We want to make this a great veterans home, a great facility for our loved ones can come to. What is your mission? And they said, serving those who have served. That is what they felt their mission was. Their vision, a person-centered community of excellence that meet and exceed the needs of those we serve in an environment of peace and well-being. A core value, again, taking the heart into what we feel when we're caring for our veterans, is we care. Willingness to serve in an environment of person-centered care with compassion, accountability, respect, and dignity with excellence as our standard. A2, develop goals and objectives, and again, I will not read all of the goals and objectives, but they are here for you to look at. But for an example, goal number one, the Minnesota Veterans Home Minneapolis will meet and exceed customer expectations by providing quality care and services as a community of excellence. In this particular case, not only do we have objectives, but we also have strategies. The strategies speak to how we're going to do this, and it breaks it down to the very finite team and members that will take care of those. I'd like to go to goal number two. Under goal number two, the Minnesota Veterans Home, Minneapolis, will provide effective and efficient services according to the residents' needs to ensure fiscal integrity. Again, we want to hold people accountable, making sure that we are bidding for services correctly, that we're following state processes and those types of things, and again, making sure that we're caring for our veterans while we're maintaining fiscal responsibility. Goal number three, the Minneapolis home will establish customer service standards of excellence to sustain and improve positive customer relations. As an example here, the Minneapolis home will develop a customer service plan to improve internal and external relationships by December 1st, 2010. There are a lot of things we're trying to do at one time, so we have to establish time frames so we can measure these. And the measurements are set by the dates in the objectives and the strategies. So it'll make it easy for us to track it as a department. And when we report back to your committee, we can come back and say, we have met goal three, objective A, B, and C by this timeline, and everything is on our strategic plan. Goal number four, the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis, as an employer of choice, will recruit, hire, and retain the highest quality workforce. And these are objectives and strategies on how we can recruit and retain our staff again. Goal number five, the Minneapolis home will maximize utilization of technology and enhance residents' quality of life. There are many types of electronic communication systems, different types of electronic medical records, and things that we can use within our system to provide the best possible care. Right now, Laverne is testing out a wireless system. Once they have worked all the bugs out of it, we will then start putting those at some of our other homes. The next part of our of the presentation talks about the construction project priority listing and the status report on that. That is also part of the legislation that has asked the department to ensure that every year we move forward and submit Andy Ojai County, as an example, the Wilmer Veterans Home on the list or towards the bonding. The department really has no control over the priority list for the Department of Veteran Affairs, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. We submit our requests, and then based on priority systems, number from 1 through 7, priority 1 is the most important. Priority 1 is where it's either a life safety issue, there is 1/3 match has been committed by the state, and just because you get on the priority 1 list doesn't mean that you will be funded by the Department of Veteran Affairs. They also have dollars that they are budgeted for construction projects. So depending on where you fall in line, depending on the dollars that they have available to fund that particular project.
Nurse Clay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner Avocado. Looking at this list, you know, a couple years ago we had a report in front of this committee about the coverage area that the veterans' homes were accomplishing in Minnesota. And there's a huge hole in the north central and the northwest part of this state where there's no coverage. We had vets that were traveling hundreds of miles one way to get the service, and we now have a clinic in Bemidji, which is helpful. Here's to my recollection of that service map that there would be significant duplication of services if Montevideo or Wilmer were built, where there is a huge gaping hole up in our area. And I would like to sit down and have a chance to visit with you about the veterans nursing home needs in the northern part of the state, because there really is. I mean, Silver Bay is way over on the east side, and Fergus Falls is the farthest north any other facility is, and I think you might want to revisit the locations of some of these requests.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the Wilmer facility, or the project for Wilmer, was put in by the Veterans Home Board. Again, once it's put in and it's on the list, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be funded or that it may even come to fruition. The Montevideo project was just recently put on the list, and the reason for that was that they put their process together. There was an existing policy by the Veterans Home Board that when someone has all the paperwork and puts in the request, we will assist and they would get it in. But again, it may not get funded if it doesn't get into the priority one and has the 1/3 match or the 35% match for that. We're right now conducting a study, two studies. One is a 7-county metro area study, and that again was legislatively mandated. The first study, the 7-county metro area study in the Minneapolis home, is to determine whether the Minneapolis home should continue to operate as such, or should we sell off the Minneapolis campus and build 4 care centers in the 7-county metro area. That was something that we were mandated to study, and we have a consulting group right now looking at that. The other study will be a statewide study and looking at the methodology of where would be the best place to put a future veterans home if the legislators and the governor felt that it was appropriate to build another veterans home. At that time, they will look at a number of things such as close proximity to medical care. Is there a community-based outpatient clinic, which is a CVOC for the VA in the area. There's a number of things that they'll look at, and also to see if there's an employment base. You don't want to put a veterans home in a location and then find out you can't hire staff to man the home, staff the home. So we're conducting that study. One study is on its way. The second study has yet to start because we're working with a consultant right now, working on the contracts to make sure that that is done correctly.
Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner, well, I'm pleased to hear that second study is just starting up. I would encourage you to take a look at what's going on in the North Central part. There is a clinic in Bemidji. I don't represent Bemidji, but I do have a number of areas where my constituents would travel to that community for service. And there, if you look at a coverage map, and I'm hopeful that this commission will also look at it, there really is quite a gaping service hole up in the north central northwest part of the state, and be looking forward to the results of this commission's work.
On the construction priority listing for 2009, under the priority one listing, which is the grouping that could be funded if the VA has sufficient funding for that whole group, it's either a life safety or the one-third match has been committed. The Minneapolis Veterans Home Building 9, last year, the Building 9 was condemned and went through the bonding process. We received 100% to demolish and one-third to rebuild a new Building 9. That is on the priority list as number two. It's a life safety issue. We do have the one-third match, so it made number two on the priority list. The Minneapolis Adult Day Health renovation for Building 4, that was something that was approved by the legislators several years ago, but the Veterans Home Board decided to hold off on building or starting a new program on the Minneapolis campus while they were having all the issues on the campus. I feel comfortable and confident that we're moving in the right direction. There are services that veterans could be using, and we can provide those services. So we have it now on the list. However, due to cost of living increases, I'm not sure that there is a sufficient amount of money to make this project work, but we'll have to see, because we have to go back and look to see the designs, and everything was done in 2000, not happened in 8 years. So we're going through the design process right now. The Hastings Watershed Project, that was a project that was being done there on Hastings. This is a reimbursement back. The home put money into it from asset preservation, which could be done, but we also put it in for the federal match so that the state can get back the money that was put into that project. Number 62 on the list, Fergus Falls Dementia Special Care Unit, the 24-bed. Through the bonding process, the one-third match was identified for that project, but it hit a level on the priority one listing that we may not have it funded this year. The funding for the federal government didn't go that far on the list.
Deputy Commissioner, before you get off of that page, you know if the new Secretary of Veterans Administration has said anything about including these veterans' constructions in his economic stimulus plan, do you know?
I do not know. Mr. Chair, I do not know the answer to that.
I think that's something we ought to follow up on.
We can call the...
Because it creates jobs and...
Mr. Chair, we can contact the VA and find out if that's included in there, and we can get back to you on that. Under priority list 2 through 7, and the priority list 2 through 7 is very complicated, and if you look in CFR, 38 CFR, and you look at the way the wording is and how it's actually determined, it's very complicated. So if any of the members would like to really know how 2 through 7 are identified, I'd be more than happy to sit down with you and show you. And like I said, it's really complicated to figure out. The important thing to keep in mind is that if you're not in priority one, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to be funded. That's the most important part of this process. So what you see on the list here, the Minneapolis kitchen dining room renovation, the Minneapolis phase two renovation of Building 17, the Montevideo 90-bed Veterans Home and the Wilmer Veterans Home are on the list 2 through 7, which has not been identified to be funded.
Senator Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two easy questions, Deputy Commissioner. How many projects are on the priority one list?
At the end of the list, you have the list? Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson Ropes, we have a list here. If you can bear with me for 1 second. Under priority one, there are 77 for priority one.
Okay. And then the priority two through seven?
The total list is 137.
Okay. Thank you. That puts it in context a little bit. Thank you. And then I'd like to follow up on the chair's question about the federal stimulus package. I think it would be really a great idea if the commissioner and deputy commissioner and chair of this committee and perhaps even House leadership draft a letter to President-elect Obama suggesting or strongly encouraging him to consider veterans building projects in the federal stimulus package, because I believe they have not specifically targeted those projects yet. And if they start hearing from states with the recurring themes, it's quite possible that they would add us to the list or boost our priorities. So I think that's something that we should consider here in Minnesota.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, members, the list for those nursing homes is going to grow and grow and grow. The 1,000 left in December or January for IRAC. Some of them will come back and need maybe some nursing home care. So the needs goes on and on, and gets greater, greater, and greater. So keep that in mind.
Part of the legislation and the bill from last year was asking us, and this is where the study comes in, this next section, partnering in deliveries with delivery of veteran services report. The language here talks about what we're looking and asking the contractor to look at. The number of things we're looking is, you know, the area of veteran census, totals and broken down by age, need for service, other factors that are associated with that, area demographics. And again, keep in mind, this is the 7-county metro area study, because this has already been signed and has been made public. So we're not done with the statewide study, but it'll be similar to this in nature. Area demographics, distance to federal administration, medical center, community-based outpatient clinics for medical care, support services such as community medical services, hospitals, doctors, nurses, therapists that are available, medical employment availability, and then the list goes on. So these are the things that we are asking the consultant to look at when they're developing the study. So when we report on the study, they've exhausted all the different avenues possible. Are there any questions about the study that I might be able to answer? Because I'm going to move right into the next section.
Questions, members? Go ahead, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you. The part of the discussion last year when we were putting in bonding was a supportive housing project for the Hastings Veterans Home. Hastings is a domiciliary. Our residents there are a little different from the residents that we care for at our nursing homes. They're a little bit more, you know, they're more independent in many ways, but they may have either substance abuse or behavior health or mental illness type issues. And the work that Hastings does to get the veterans back on their feet and feeling good about themselves, getting integrated back into the community is absolutely phenomenal, the work that they're doing. One of the steps that's missing is that transition, moving them from the veterans' home into a supportive housing where they can have an a la carte type of approach where they can either get medical care, meals, pharmaceuticals, or something from the veterans' home, but yet they're living independently. And so what we did was we did not get the funding through bonding, but a recommendation came from the House to go out and seek some other form of funding for this. The staff at the Hastings home went through the Minnesota Housing and Finance Agency, worked with them and received a 501c3 grant to build a home, and that also includes a portion of that, not only to build and operate it, but also to hire a staff member to also operate that for a period of time. In that, the population that it would serve would be those coming from the Veterans Home at at Hastings, but some that could also be included are mentally ill, traumatic brain injury, and chemical dependency as well. Department of Justice Civil Rights for Institutionalized Persons Act, CRIPA. July 2008, a letter was written to the governor. The letter stated that the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division would be conducting an investigation of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Authority under the Civil Rights for Institutionalized Persons Act that is cited there gave them the ability to contact the governor and start the investigation. The investigation will focus on health care issues, including medical and nursing care services. They also wanted to know whether residents are safe from abuse or other harm, and whether residents are served in a most integrated setting appropriate to their needs. Department of Justice has not reached a conclusion at this point on the subject matter of the investigation. The Department of Justice, and this is all coming from a letter that went to the governor, stating that the Department of Justice believes that the state wants to operate the Veterans Home consistent with the requirements of the Constitution and federal law. During the course of the Department of Justice investigation, they will consider all relevant information, particularly the efforts the state has undertaken to ensure compliance with federal law. They will also offer or provide recommendations on ways to improve the conditions at the facility when appropriate. Department of Justice states that provided that the state cooperates fully with the investigation, if they conclude that there are not systemic violations of the constitutional rights of the veterans, they will close the investigation. Department of Justice also stated that if they conclude that such violations are present, they will provide a detailed written findings and identify a minimum measures they believe that are necessary to remedy the violation. This includes financial issues and other technical agencies that can assist us in correcting the issues. Department of Justice has requested several copies of documents to be sent to them prior to the visit. Due to the Minnesota Governmental Data Practices Act, we are not able to send the personal identifiable information, so what we had to do, we had to redact all of the information. There was a lot of medical records that we had to go through and redact, which took quite some time. The CRIPA visit was scheduled for September 29, 2008, but was postponed until the Department of Justice reviews our position as a state under the Governmental Data Practices Act. On November 20, 2008, two members from the team, of the CRIPA team, conducted a preliminary visit at the Minneapolis home to get the lay of the land, walk through the facility, and get an idea of how the structure and looking initially at how the veterans were being cared for. They also took copies of death records, residents that had passed away. They wanted copies of those as well. The department is cooperating with the CRIPA division as much as we can, given the Data Practices Act, but even though we can't provide the identifiable information, we've been able to redact most of the information. Another way that we've tried to mitigate this is by actually asking for a release of information from each family member to make sure that when the inspectors come in, we have a release of information so we don't run into any problems either. So we've briefed the following: the governor's office, legislators, the advisory council, staff, residents, family members, and the veterans community on what's happening with the CRIPA investigation. The CRIPA team is scheduled to arrive at the Minneapolis home the first week of February, February 3rd, and they will stay until February 6th. The team will consist of five members, and we anticipate their visit to be about 4 to 5 days. I will pass on the legislative auditor's report. I think that we discussed that
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the United States Department of Veteran Affairs survey. The United States Department of Veteran Affairs conducted their annual survey of the Minneapolis home on the 2nd and the 3rd of December. The survey that the Department of Veteran Affairs conducts normally takes about 4 to 5 days. They were done in 2 days at the home. The Veterans Home has not yet received official report from the survey team. However, they were very complimentary, and they commented on a lot of the systems and processes that we put in place. On December 4th, the day after, the survey team returned to the Veterans Home and wanted to get some clarification on basic life support and CPR procedures. The VA recommended that the home train as many direct staff in CPR. The question there was the federal government in a hospital, they mandate that every single caregiver is CPR certified. We are working on trying to meet the same type of requirement. However, in the state of Minnesota, that is not a requirement for our health services techs. It makes sense, and we're working towards doing that at present. So in summary, the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, we're very proud of the work that we've accomplished since the merger of 2007. We've accomplished a great deal in the past year. The areas in this report only reflect a portion of the accomplishments where we worked very diligently to revisit and reinstate our reputation at the Veterans Home. Mr. Chair, that concludes my report. I just stand by for any questions.
Any questions? Senator Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, I just have one question back to the CRIPA thing. I think we've been reading some of that in the newspaper, and it seems that there was a little obstacle there with the Data Practices Act, but you mentioned you're working with families to get release of that information. Is that going along well? So you feel that it was sort of like at a point of resistance there, or we were stuck a little bit. Is that going to be able to be worked through?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ropes, it appeared in the paper that there was some resistance. I don't believe that there was resistance. We were working from the very beginning, from the time we were notified, and we informed the Department of Justice of the Data Practices Act. So immediately we came up with the idea with the Department of Justice on the redacting of information. But the amount of information that they're requesting is just monumental. It's just incredibly huge. So to go through, and it's not so much redacting a name at the bottom of a paper, that you have, when a person's writing notes, you may have names throughout the actual document. So you have to carefully go through and darken all of that information. We've gone back to the Attorney General's office and the Governor's office. However, the state of Minnesota's position still feels that under the Governmental Data Practices Act, that we cannot release this information to them. So we will work on other means. We've worked very closely with the family council to try to get the information out to the family members. The first time we requested information, we didn't get a really good response from the family members. There was some confusion as to why they needed to fill this out, but we did get some response. However, this time around, we're working very closely with the family council and getting the word out to the family members that we want to be as helpful and transparent as possible, but unfortunately right now, this is the only way that we can do this.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Laurie.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Deputy Commissioner Acevedo, I had a question on the same issue. It said that the CRIPA visit was postponed until DOJ reviewed our position on the Minnesota Governmental Data Practices Act. Have they challenged our position? Do they believe that Minnesota law does not preclude you from providing full information?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lowry, they've run into this situation with other states. They would prefer that it would be in their best interest to come in and be able to look at all our documents. It will make the inspection go by much quicker. Unfortunately, with the redacting of information, they feel that, in fact, they've actually made the comment that you know, that's a lot of work for your staff to do. On top of that, we have an electronic medical record, so they can't get into our electronic medical record and look at things. We would have to print the documents and hand it to them to look at. They understand our situation. The reason that there was a pause there is that they wanted to go back and revisit what's the best way to do this if the state feels that we don't have the right to look at this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Cox. I'm the American Legion Legislative Chairman. I asked to speak to the committee after listening to the testimony and the comments and the questions from committee members. We, as 100,000 strong plus members of the American Legion, have a personal interest in the success of all the veterans' homes. With that, I want to ask the committee members to hold the homes accountable, but to keep in mind the successes and accomplishments of the deputy commissioner in the short length of time that he has been in Minnesota. He has had to turn things around again and again. We, the American Legion, and I don't speak for all the other eight major veterans organizations, but I feel strongly that they agree. And we have a vested interest in the home's success, and we have the confidence Deputy Commissioner Acevedo will deliver and continue to show a huge success in all veterans' homes and mainly Minneapolis. I have a personal interest in the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I go out there quite often. I was out there at the Christmas party on the third floor of the dementia group. I took my granddaughter along. We were there. We served the folks. I talked to them. My daughter is also the photographer for the high school paper in Stillwater. We assigned her to go around and take pictures of the families with permission of the families. She did. And she learned a lot. And I think that we all need to support all the veterans' home, support Gil, his staff. They've done a wonderful job since he's been there. And I will continue to support him through the American Legion, and we in the American Legion, and I'm sure all the veterans' organizations will be there to fight for him and the things that he needs in the future. And I thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Can we make an announcement?
Before members leave, before we gavel down, next week, should we not have a meeting on Tuesday? It's inauguration today after lots of the House members aren't even going to be here. I need to let members know now, then we would skip that one and go to Thursday. If we're only going to have two people here, and it hardly pays to have a meeting. So what do you think? I'd like to poll you. Should we hold off and
that'd be Thursday, I mean.
And go Thursday? It's early in the session. We're just kind of stumbling along. I think that, okay, then we'll do that. We will not meet until Thursday. I want to say something. You know, this committee, every member of this committee is behind veterans 100%. But you see the frustration that some of us have because things are not getting done like we'd like to have them done. Senator Coring's not here. He's one of our lead person in my committee on veterans issues. And so some of us get very frustrated. Maybe when you get a little older, you kind of don't get quite so frustrated. But I think that, you know, this committee will pass and work for every veterans issue there is. We will. And so, Deputy Commissioner, you know that something has to be done out there, and we can't have you come back another year and nothing's done. We want something, or a report, at least. And I think that's only fair to the committee. Anybody else have anything to say? If not, members, we're adjourned.
Appropriation was ongoing.